Welcome to Multimedia Live's Pre-Budget Analysis Podcast. Today we're going to be dissecting some of the national budget speech, which is set to be announced this Wednesday by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni. And I'm in studio with some of Tiso Black Star's top financial journalists. We have Lucanyo, who is the editor of The Business Day. We have Rob, who is editor of The Financial Mail. And Ron, who is the editor of The Business Times. How are you, gentlemen?
Great.
Can
I just get a sense in the room before we actually begin our discussion, because we've got a couple of topics that we want to run through, just on how everyone is feeling about what Tito Mboweni is going to be doing for us on Wednesday.
I suppose if I could start.
Yep.
I mean, I think suppose you have to look back to the medium-term budget framework that came out in October last year, which wasn't the most optimistic. It wasn't well taken by the markets. I mean, it gave quite a grim picture, actually, in terms of the deficit's going to be higher for longer.
Yeah,
it's going to take us a longer time for the debt-to-GDP ratio to peak, but it's also going to peak at a higher rate. I think it's like more like 60% as opposed to 58%.
Yeah.
So that is the background. It's a background of deteriorating fiscal situation, and since then we've had more bad news on a whole range of issues, from Eskom to SAA. So I think that's those. So it's not one I look at with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of optimism.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Lucanyo. I mean, this is a budget for which you can't expect too many good things. For years we had a budget where the next day in the front page of the newspapers it was, you know, Trevor Manuel's gift to South Africa and that sort of thing, but this isn't going to be one of those. I mean, last year set the scene, as Lucanyo said, so it'll be pretty bleak. I don't think there's much room to hike income taxes, personal taxes, much. So I think it's going to be a budget of standing on eggshells as long as possible.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much in the same light. Bleak, but you know, what was our previous finance minister, Gigaba? I don't think it'll be like, hey, it's all terrible, nothing we can do type of thing. So I'm interested to see how Mboweni trying to phrase this thing that we got this under control. I mean, he'll paint a picture that it's tough out there, right? But it's more interesting to me to see how they respond to it. I mean, there's no way they can kick the can down the road when it comes to Eskom, and they're like, they've got to come with, okay, this is what we can do for Eskom, and going forward is how we'll get Eskom on the right trajectory. But so that's for me the interesting stuff. But it will be a bleak picture. But importantly is how we phrase it, like, look, we've got this. And not, I mean, I think Gigaba was the most embarrassing speech when it was the medium-term budget, right?
Yeah.
Basically, this guy just said, I like to put it in Zulu terms, ibimile, like literally nothing I can do. This is the books, right? So we're interested to see how Mboweni, the disinterested Mboweni, paints a picture of, like, we got this.
Okay, so for us to, you know, maybe get further into the discussion, we're going to start off with talking about tax, and we have a little something, you know, featuring Rob Cooper, just to get us thinking about what tax might look like after Wednesday.
With VAT having risen by 1% in last year's budget from 14% to 15%, we asked Sage, South Africa's tax expert and chairperson of the Payroll Authors Group of South Africa, Rob Cooper, what he would be looking out for in this year's budget.
Employment tax incentive, an extremely important piece of legislation. It's been extended for 10 years. Its purpose is to try and reduce the very high rate of unemployment amongst young people. And having been extended for another 10 years, we are hoping that the legislators will consider simplifying the legislation and making it less risky to improve the take-up by employers of the employment tax incentive. As far as tax rates are concerned, my expectation is that there won't be major hikes to the tax rates for personal income tax. They will rather look at stealth increases in the form of not increasing the tax table brackets for the higher income people to adjust for inflation, but they will adjust for inflation for the lower income people, for example. I think that they will look at fuel levies again. It's low-hanging fruit. They will look at sin taxes. They will look at sugary beverages, which has been on the cards for quite some time, and they will be boosting tax in those sorts of forms. I think further that the policymakers will be looking to SARS to get back to their efficient tax collection of previous years and in that way take some pressure off tax revenue to reduce the requirement for tax increases.
So, gentlemen, what do we think from a taxes point of view? I think I was reading somewhere earlier today that they probably estimate that we might be collecting about 1.4 trillion rand in taxes this year, but they feel that's about, I think they said 200 billion below the estimated amount. So do you also agree that this is low-hanging fruit? You know, some of these things, fuel levies, estate taxes, you know, I don't think VAT will be a thing. So, you know, what are the thoughts?
I mean, I would agree definitely on the VAT thing, not like 4 months before an election. So I think that one you can to basically write off. I mean, there was another 1 percentage point increase last year, which was made necessary, actually, mostly like that thing to do with sort of inefficiencies. And I mean, there was an issue with economic growth, but there were also a lot of inefficiencies at SARS with all the restructuring that they had done there. And I think like your speaker there mentioned that maybe they might have a hope that they're starting to fix SARS, that maybe on the collection side, even if the economy is not much better, but maybe we'll get better on actually collecting the taxes that are there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be one of many. The other things like fuel levies and taxes, as I said, I mean, those are sort of always the easy hanging fruit ones. But the question is how structural. I mean, I think we need to talk about something a bit more structural, because I don't know how much of that will actually fill in the gap, at least in to such an extent that to convince the credit agencies that their finances are actually on a sustainable path. So it really has to be more than just about how much money we raise this year. It's really about setting the tone for the next couple of years in order to convince people that we are actually on a sustainable path.
I agree with Lucanio, but I do think that, you know, it is about creating a sustainable path on the way forward, but even now you have to fill the gaps. And the obvious place is like you say, but I do think the fuel levy, I mean, it's risen quite a lot when the oil price came down. The oil price is now increasing again, and I think it'll be problematic to increase the fuel levy by much because, you know, we've seen the impact of fuel price protests in Zimbabwe, and I think that government's very aware that this could escalate out of control. So I think they'll be wary of that. I think the top-end luxury items, that's always a way to tax a sort of a de facto indirect wealth tax, and that's a way to tax the people who have more. So maybe that's a better way of doing it. I think carbon taxes are something that have been on hold for a while that could be used, and the sugar tax as well. Could also be implemented in a way that doesn't, you don't have a sort of a headline VAT increase like you had last year, which was, you know, lacerating to the general public. You have a, you know, 1 percentage point increase, and it does have a major impact on people's bottom lines. You're right, we do need a sustainable way forward in the next few years, but I think even now you need something that fills in the gap. I mean, that 50 billion hole they had at the half year stage is, you know, not pretty.
Yeah, like, okay, I mean, it's all the easy stuff, right? It's in taxes, cigarettes, booze and stuff like that as well. I mean, sugary beverages, imagine that's also
but
easy.
But that's going to destroy the journalism fraternity.
Exactly. The fraternity is destroying, is falling apart. Is it? But on sugary beverages, it's all, as much as that's an easy thing, I think Coca-Cola is cutting 1,000-odd jobs because of it, right? So, but anyway. But that's where you see the easy wins are for Treasury. But it's... The biggest nightmare for them all is just that the fact the economy is not growing fast enough.
No matter
what they say about how much the entire raises revenues, I mean, that's fundamentally the problem with South Africa, is that the economy is where it is. And the constraints will be like that. But I mean, on SARS and just getting people to believe in the sanctity of SARS again, that is massive, right? It would be lovely on Wednesday's budget for... seemed a nice surprise to actually name the new SARS commissioner, right? Wasn't that's all. But anyway, that's down the line. But I think that is, in essence, what I mean. The fuel levy is syntax, they'll do all the same. But again, it's just the message of where you're going to get sustainable revenue growth, right? Outside of just punishing us for drinking and for being journalists, in truth. And on fuel levies, I mean, Rob is right. They're lucky in a sense. It was early last year when the fuel was at 16 rand a litre. It's come down quite significantly since, so at least they will play on fuel levies, but there'll be that little less pressure on that. But we can't keep playing on fuel levies and simply taxing people who are actually going to work, right?
Yeah, but this is the question I wanted to know, maybe pose to the room, is there's a lot of focus around what expenditure will be like in the budget. you know, because of all the different things that need to happen, especially on the SOE side. But in terms of, you know, increasing revenues, the truth of the matter is more than 50% of revenues for the government come from personal income tax, you know. But how much more? Because all the things we've spoken about, from wealth taxes to fuel levies and the like, they don't really dent and bring in as much revenue, right? Mm. In a realistic sense, what Tito Mboweni would need to do is to raise personal income taxes in some way. But as this is an election year, is it going to happen?
Beyond election year, man, this is a... It'll be a dead nail to the economy, man. Like, the economy is already where, confidence-wise, even if this wasn't an election year, it was... Ramaphosa's first, it was post Ramaphosa's appointment. You can't play on that. If you're trying to stimulate some activity in the economy, going there is like, geez, that smacks of major desperation. So I don't think that's something they can play with for some time.
Yeah. And they also can't, I don't think they can increase company tax as much either, because your incentive now is to create jobs. And if you disincentivize the companies from creating jobs, you're in a major bind. I think they have very limited scope when it comes to the corporate sector in terms of extra taxes they can squeeze out.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to look after their spend, right? Which also is an ugly thing. So they have to, governments look after how much public sector employment and reduce it. I think they have, by natural attrition, been doing that, but it's not hiring any more people. But as much as they need to look after their books, the double whammy is the more they cut jobs, the more that feeds into the economy. I mean, is it 60% of the South African economy is consumption? So if they fire public servants, which we all are calling for, which are K-5, gets their books in order, but also then in turn affects the overall economy. So it's a fine balancing act of, okay, we need to look after our own books, but we know, I mean, the government knows that that affects the general feed of the economy. So it's not as easy as we all just want them to do.
Okay. I think, you know, we can then move on to the expenditure side now. There's very little that's going to happen on the revenue side. Mm-hmm. And one of the first issues that really needs to be tackled, you know, we keep hearing about NHI and the like, but we want to talk about health. And before we get into it, we have a small clip for you.
I'm looking forward in the budget to clarity as far as the National Health Insurance Scheme is concerned. It is a very important project for the country. Its outreach and the quality of the standards of health cover in the country is very important, but it's hugely expensive and it has been dragging its heels over the years. So I'm hoping for clarity as far as that is concerned.
Cooper also reflected on the financeability of National Health Insurance.
National Health Insurance is one of the big ticket items of the government. One wonders, with the election coming up, whether there are going to be moves to put it into effect. Last year we did see draft legislation being put into place, but it seems that the restraint is still the economic situation. While being a well-intentioned piece of legislation, it is hugely expensive, and one wonders when and how they're going to put this into effect.
So, gentlemen, is this thing realistic? I think we've heard about it being spoken about for years and years, and implementation has also been quite a challenge. Given where South Africa is right now, should Tito Mboweni even be mentioning this thing on Wednesday night, or can it just be a line item like, we will bring it up later on, we have more important things to focus on?
I mean, that is a good question. I mean, it's not even a case of more important things. What can we do now? What kind of capacity do we have now to do? I mean, we've been talking here about all the issues we need to deal with, from Eskom to you name it.
Yeah.
I mean, and Ron made the point. I mean, the only way really to get revenue is to actually fund all these things is to get the economy going, and the economy isn't going.
Yeah.
So I think that needs to be the first priority. And a lot of concern, obviously, a lot of things that need to be done that won't be done, as we know from the initial reactions to talk about Eskom, unbundling, all the restructuring that needs to be done, the privatizations that might help plug those numbers in order to release resources. So we know these aren't going to happen in the short term. And then obviously there's also the issue of capacity. I mean, you look at our state of our public hospitals. I mean, they aren't working as they are now. I mean, you hear stories about not having enough beds, not having enough needles, not having... Then to think we are going to create this like new infrastructure, this new bureaucracy, this new in the midst of all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, how long did it take, say, the UK to get the NHS like on the go? I mean, the idea that like when we can't even actually run our airline properly, that we can somehow like think we're gonna create this whole new bureaucracy and this new health service. I mean, it just sounds a bit unrealistic.
Mm. I mean, the plan was to have NHI working by 2025, and that seems completely ridiculous. It's not going to happen. I think at the medium-term stage, Tito Mboweni, I think the allocation was 2.3 billion towards NHI, and he shaved half a billion off that already, which was an indication that he didn't really think that they could spend the money properly. And Lukanya is completely right. You know, it's almost putting the cart before the horse, because you have essentially a situation where our public hospitals are a complete mess, and you're wanting to spend a whole lot of extra money. It's a noble goal to basically have universal healthcare, and it should be achieved. But the unrealistic timeframes, the unrealistic expenditure at this current point make it completely ludicrous.
Yeah, Ron.
Yeah, but it's pretty sad. Like, as I on Rob's final point, it is a noble goal, like universal healthcare. I mean, all the best economies in the world educate their people and provide a decent level of healthcare for the people, right? That's a sign of a healthy economy. But it just, unfortunately, at this position as we are, like, I mean, this whole talk is actually rather depressing, how we're talking about we're just in a bad place. You know, but I think on NHI, it's when I start to figure, like, when you pay school fees for your kid, is it an expense or an investment? And, you know, as much as school fees are rising, we all have kids here in private schools, except for Lukanya's kids in the UK, where they are private. But we can't look at it as an expense, go look at it as an investment, right, when you educate your kids. So in as much as healthcare is the same thing, as much as it's an expense, it is an investment, right? It almost helps the future competitiveness of your economy.
Yeah.
But I think there's two things. Really, our economic condition is not in the best place. But I also think our minister, I mean, we have Motsoaledi gets away with a lot because everyone says how passionate he is and how he's a professional doctor and how he's the perfect man for healthcare. But let's be honest, like, this thing has not moved since over 10 years. When NHI has been in the conversation, I even think when in the good old days of surplus, which Rob was talking about, with the manual was still around. But let's be honest, our health minister has not given a solid enough vision of how this thing will work. I mean, I push the reporters, like, so how is NHI going to work? like, give me, get some semblance from the state of, like, this is the design. The part was, you always talk about, no, there has to be a private-public partnership, PPP, whatever. Yeah. And you can see that, I mean, the state of our healthcare, our hospitals, they're in a bad state anyway. So I'm glad, I'm sure they'll be happy to get some more foot traffic into their hospitals. So. But there is no plan. We're waiting for this thing for Yong. So it's not even like, yeah, we can say there's no money for it, but also we don't know what is it, right?
Yeah, well, completely. I mean, the issue is, like you say, there's, you know, if Motsoaledi had laid out a plan to say this is exactly how it'll work, this is how it's going to be funded, this is what the benefit it'll give to society, then you could assess the pros and cons in a more, I suppose, fair way to him as to and to everyone else. But the lack of any planning, the lack of any ideas, the lack of clarity means that you really are shooting in the dark. So to spend so much on something like that, at the moment seems a bridge too far.
I mean, also like a lot of disarray, disarray in terms of the implementation, in terms of the policy. Remember, like the minister and the stories about how the DG was being sidelined because, like, the advisor to the president, he was actually taking over.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, the DG was supposed to sign up to all these things, was not actually involved.
So even sitting here, we can say there's no money, but we have no idea in hell what the hell is this thing. But we know it's important. We know you could toss it up and say, okay, it's an expense. However, okay, let's take a deep breath and say it is investment, right? Mm-hmm. Just accept this is part of our. But there's nothing on the table.
I think.
But my question is, sorry to interject, is. In countries like America, right, you see Republicans trying to cut on I think they called it Medicaid there.
Obamacare, you
know? Obamacare, and stuff like that, which means that even in the developed world, they're learning that this thing can actually be quite a strain on the fiscus.
The Americans are different.
Of course.
It's what Europeans. Americans are a republic, and healthcare, it's a whole racial stuff that we can go deep in, but Yeah, that's politics.
But
politics of America.
I mean, you do have different systems across the world. I mean, in the UK, you have a system that's totally state-funded, whereas, like, say, in the countries like, say, Germany and Switzerland, you've got a mixture of both. And there's no reason why you can't. I mean, I don't think any of us here would say we disagree with the concept. I don't think you'll find... Now, that's the one thing what Solidi says. He will say, like, when people, like, talk about the costs, he will say, oh, like, you know, like as you said, like, it's an investment. Now, all those people who are saying, like, all the sort of bad people, you know, he sort of portrays it as if he's the only one who really believes in this thing. And everybody else thinks, like, it's an inconvenience. But that's not what everybody's saying.
No.
I mean, people are saying, it's always a good thing. We'd love to have it. Nobody here doesn't want to have it.
Yeah.
But the question is, like, is this the time? Have you got the capacity? Have you got the financing right now?
Well, Motsoaledi has been a battering ram. Okay, it's fine to have someone from public sector going in there, and, like, you know, you got to challenge privacy. You can't just say yes. You can't bow down to Discovery and the likes of Netcare and stuff. But his manner and the fact that he just has no vision to bring forward to take on the private sector.
I think that, I mean, this budget to me, I think, is going to be the real focus will be on spending and how to cut spending. It won't be on how much more we're raising, because, like everyone said, there's limited scope. So then you look at things like SAA, you look at things like Eskom, and at least with SAA, if you put more money into that, a plane takes off and a plane lands and people arrive somewhere. NHR, we don't even have that clarity, you know.
Of how this thing is going to work. Okay, we're going to just move on, and to continue with our conversation, we're going to bring back our expert as we move on to another controversial issue in South Africa right now, big item of expenditure, which is education.
In last year's national budget, the then finance minister Malusi Gigaba announced a renewed focus on education and training following a string of protests at several institutions of higher learning.
The largest reallocations of resources towards government priorities was on higher education and training, amounting to additional funding of 57 billion rand over the medium term. As a result, this is the fastest growing spending category, with an annual average growth of 13.7%. Accordingly, this government is proud to implement a major step forward towards our ultimate goal of guaranteeing access to higher education and training for all South Africans who qualify based on merit, not on class position. This follows former President Zuma's response to the Hare Commission of Inquiry into the higher education and training, reaffirmed by President Ramaphosa. Government will phase in fee-free higher education and training to students from poor and working class families.
No black student that will go home because he's owing fees here.
However, despite Gigaba's announcement, protests have continued into 2019.
This university is anti-black.
Apparently, management sent an email last night to students telling them that it's only people who owe between 0 to 10,000 in the register. But now the problem we face is that the bulk of the students who owe above 10,000 can then not register. The second thing that we are facing currently is the issue of accommodation. There are students who do not have funding at all, but they can't access accommodation as well. Now, last year the university made provision for SLN and Whitewaters in Parktown for students who did not have accommodation. But that option is not available to us.
We're here because this institution is arrogant and refuses to meet students halfway. We had met with them on Thursday and we had said to them, these are the demands that we're tabling to you, to assist our students to register and to be housed. Our students are sleeping in libraries. Our students who cannot register because of outstanding debt. This is why we're tabling forth these demands to you. Assist us.
Meanwhile, primary and secondary learning institutions are still battling to provide students with acceptable basic infrastructure. Section 27 education attorney Samantha Brenner describes concerns around the country's lack of basic infrastructure and funding at education facilities.
According to the state's most recent numbers, there are 4,000 schools with pit latrines, plain pit latrines across the country, and of those, 1,600 odd of them are in the Eastern Cape, 1,300 odd of them are in KZN, and another 500 are in Limpopo. And that doesn't take into account schools which have pit toilets and additional, so there's two categories, There's schools with pit toilets where the learners are forced to use the pit because it's the only form of sanitation. But there are also pits and schools with pits, which, so there's another form of sanitation which they can use, but the pits remain undemolished. And so they are quite a serious safety hazard if they haven't been demolished. So in addition to 4,000 pit schools with just only pits in the country, there's another sort of just over 3,000 with undemolished pits. So most of those again are in Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. So there's a lot of work to be done to make school sanitation dignified and safe. We're quite worried about some of the things that were said in the State of the Nation speech, for example, about distribution of tablets to all learners across the country in the next 6 years, and we're not sure how that's going to translate in the budget speech. To be clear, we applaud moves towards incorporating modern tech in curriculum, for example, subjects which equip learners for the future. But a move like rolling out tablets to schools is going to be an extraordinarily expensive exercise. And we really hope that this is the cost of that has been carefully calculated, and that it doesn't come at the expense of things like school sanitation facilities you can imagine a school where, and this is the case in lots of the rural provinces, where a learner will have a tablet but they won't have a desk or a chair to sit at, or they will be using pits in the ground for toilets. And the absurdity of a situation like that. So we really hope that basic education is prioritized in the budget sufficiently, and we hope that within that there's careful thought to where that money goes.
So, for Africa's most developed economy, education seems to still be quite an issue, from basic all the way up to tertiary, and you sort of see it, culminating 20 years after independence in the, Fees Must Fall protests, happening. And we heard Minister Kigaba, in the previous budget talking about that it would be fully funded and all of that stuff. Has it happened? Is it happening? I've actually seen a couple of institutions actually rolling back on some of these ideas, some of the scales that they've been given, to say that a person earning family's X amount and it's actually been gone up even more. So is it actually going to happen? Is it happening?
First, can't believe that Kigaba was once our finance minister. Just hearing that, it was a reminder of those dark days. But look, again, this is another one of those.
And the worst part, it wasn't even the worst of the Zuma cabinet.
Exactly. This is the bright lights of that cabinet. Jesus, terrible.
But okay, well, I won't go too far.
But
not when it comes when he was running SOEs and SOEs. And the bright lights would be like it. It's
pretty scary hearing his voice.
Oh, we're now reaping the consequences of those bright lights.
But another one of those, okay. We know education is important.
Yeah.
Zuma used that thing as he was leaving to try and get a little popularity points and to win back the ANC, and he lost it. And he promised free education. So we're stuck with this problem. But like, it's another very much in the line of an NHI where, okay, we all can all sit here and say getting our kids educated and getting the skills, given the future is a knowledge-based economy, right?
Yeah.
Fourth thing, blah, blah, blah. We need to get smarter too if we're going to compete. But again, what's the plan? Like, how is the feasibility of it? And how do we sustainably ensure that our kids get in and get an education and at the standards we want to? I think that's another one. We haven't done the full equation of how this thing moves forward. We're not quite there yet. Ramaphosa's in, and he's also promised to continue on and providing free education for tertiary education. But it's again with me, it's just the plan going forward. It'll be interesting to see what Mboweni is going to say about that in education. But it's something we need to work towards, but I just, there's no kind of a plan of how we're going to sustainably fund it.
Just running off of what Ron has just said, I want to pose to Lukanya and Rob to say, one of the things that keeps coming up is, NASFAS. Is improving NSFAS a better way for us to be tackling this issue? Because that institution has run into quite a few problems that are also contributing, you know, to this issue. So, you know, perhaps as something progressive, should we be continuing to make NSFAS better or aiming for that free education?
Well, I mean, I don't know if the two necessarily need to conflict with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a separate issue altogether. I mean, I think the whole issue with the funding, I mean, like as Ron alluded to, like to the Zuma thing, just introduced like in the middle of an ANC conference, it was totally uncosted. Can you imagine all the civil servants from like higher education and treasury sort of sitting there and suddenly they got to fund another $75 billion in the budget just because to sort of Zuma just decided in a whim that's what he's going to do. Yeah. And that's what they had to do. They had to scramble to find this money because it politically became unpalatable for Ramaphosa to basically step back from it.
Mm.
It was the same issue. I mean, I'm not totally unrelated, but it's the same issue with the whole land debate.
Mm.
I mean, once they put it out there in the midst of an ANC presidential race, he was hardly ever going to be in a position to pull back from it. So I think this one is just going to have to live with and then somehow find the money. I mean, I think how much is it that we're talking about? $50 billion or something?
Yeah.
Here?
Mm. Yeah.
And I mean, how sustainable is that? We don't actually, I mean, but I don't see how we pull out of it.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, unless like we get this miracle growth that Ron was talking about, we start getting the economy growing 5-6%, and we start having a efficient SARS. Remember, like, those days of Provin Gordon when SARS used to beat estimates. And then Rob was talking about that Manuel will give us all middle class people like a nice pay increase every year.
Mm.
Like the budget thing, right?
Yeah.
Is prioritization in your budget.
Yes.
So there is money, perhaps, for free education.
Yeah.
But you know you must deal with social welfare, the 70 million people. So there is, in your room, if you've got the ball, to do it, either somewhere. But you've got to reprioritize your spending, and that's where the difficulties. Let me give it to Rob. Well, sorry.
I also think, I agree. Mm. I mean, I do think that NSFAS is probably the best place to start because you've currently got it and reform it and fix it. But it's like, I think it's a lot of the issues that we currently dealt with. It's how you spend the money. It's accountability for how the money's spent.
Yeah.
Mm. You look at basic education, it's a disaster. I mean, it's a disaster. There was that report, the Fulmink report a couple of years ago, which found that SAT2 had effectively captured 6 of the 9 provinces, and there was no, it was not conducive towards delivering quality education for people in this country. Our math standards are amongst the lowest in the world. Grade 4 learners, according to the education, some global report, I've forgotten the name right now, you know, a majority of those grade 4 learners can't comprehend what they're reading at that stage.
Mm.
And that's the disaster. It's the fact that we're spending money on education and we're not ensuring accountability for it. So I think if Mboweni can do something, it's put in place a better accountability system for the money that's spent, not just handing over billions towards this or that because some politician said it.
Mm.
It's ensuring you get good quality for what you spend. I mean, I think our police and so many other areas too, we have a lot of money that we do commit to doing things. We just don't ensure the quality of our spending is adequately monitored and that we're getting value for money.
I think, like, I mean, if you look at any, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but if you look at any sort of World Bank or any other studies, it'd be hard to argue that South Africa doesn't spend enough on education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always or constantly like the biggest item on the budget.
Yeah.
And by middle class or middle income country standards, it's actually quite high as a percentage of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is never really been about the availability of the cash.
How the money is spent.
Is how we spend it, and also like the quality of the outcomes. I mean, like, do we produce children who actually don't know how to read by the time they're like what age?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just actually quite shocking. So that when you talk about the unions, I mean, I think I read something the other day about how the unions, like teacher unions, were striking over ESCOM. It's like, why are they striking over ESCOM? Why aren't they teaching the children?
Yeah. you know? I mean, the scariest thing about, you know, we talk about the public sector bill, right? The wage bill, and there's a large part of it is going to be teachers and police officers.
Yeah.
The scary thing, they say, you know, it's not about, there's still vacancies in these things.
Yeah.
It's the salary scales are too high. So, you actually have to deal with first bringing down the pay in a way, but there's still vacancies. Not like there's too many people.
Yeah.
It's over. No. There's still vacancies and across all these things, and which is the other ugly thing where you have the state saying no, we have to compete with the private sector in terms of keeping people in this in the, and there's bloated salaries there. There are bloated salaries in the public sector. So it's not working well. We overspend on salaries within that department. So that just weakens the whole institution, the whole, and I don't, we'll do that audit of how much people should earn in the public sector, and making sure that all these vacancies are filled so we have a properly functioning state. That's another headache for someone. And hopefully it's this in this next 10 years, not left to another someone else to deal with, but that's also actually part of it, right? And hence we have a state that struggles to meet its mandate, and especially on the police force and stuff like that. It's just
I mean, on the teachers, one thing that a figure I read last week, which totally shocked me, it was research by Nick Spall, who writes for, I think, Business Day and a few other people. I mean, him and his researchers at other universities had a look at the teachers in our schools, and I think it was grade six, essentially, the teachers in grade six, 78% of them could not pass a grade six maths exam.
Oh, wow.
So they're teaching our students. They don't know what they're teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, that is staggering. You have a breakdown at the lower levels. So to artificially force the matric results to look better, or officially force people into universities, doesn't deal with the breakdown in our basic education system.
At the foundation.
And I feel there's similar issues around our healthcare. We haven't solved the basic healthcare issues. Instead, we're going to superimpose NHI onto it without fixing the problem at the primary level.
Exactly. And I can imagine the nice thing, Bill, you might say something nice about crime and more money, more police hires. I think by now, South Africans must realize that shit. We spend lots of money on hiring new policemen and crime isn't going down. Like, I want that sober conversation to have at some point. That maybe we're not spending enough on intelligence, right? Instead of throwing bodies on the street, right? But that's not solving our crime situation. The same with our education, as Lukanya was saying. We spend, South Africa's very healthy on its spend on education. It's a very healthy company. We do the right things, tick boxes right there. But clearly, what's going on then? So someone must deal with SATU at some point, sit down and have a conversation with the teacher union, SATU, which is quite...
which would be fun, since, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa gets his support from the unions.
Yeah, COSATU, that's basic. COSATU is a public sector union, so and as his chief supporters, and he has to go there and deal with COSATU, right?
I mean, as Ron Kiyalak and Robert keep making the point about the resources, I mean, one of the big issues, of course, that came out last year was the fact that we had this unbudgeted wage increase for public servants. And I think in the medium-term budget, actually, Tito Mboweni refused to actually allocate extra money to pay for this. I think it was an extra 30 billion, which meant that it had to be cut itself to fund somewhere. So people, and that's something people don't seem to understand. When you do these kind of things, there's always a cost. You know, it's not like we're doing QE and printing new money here.
Unfortunately,
you have to reallocate money. Yeah. So it meant that 30 billion, instead of going to buying, like, bedding for hospitals and buying whatever needles or buying textbooks for schools, it meant it went to paying civil servants to do very what? None of us really know that much. And it sort of goes to the same thing with the education.
But I mean, just to interpose before you continue, that's what Mboweni said last year in October. He said that, you know, of every 10 rand collected, 8 of that goes to paying civil servant salaries. So that means money's not going to clinics and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And exactly, like I think that's a point that he's probably going to try and make more forcefully, but I'm not sure what he can actually do about it in terms of, like, you know, always the thing in the background, the elections coming up. I mean, I was out of the country last week, but one of the headlines I saw was Ramaphosa says no job cuts at Eskom. So I'm sure the headlines are going to be no job cuts in the civil service either. So, you know, it sort of makes you wonder where the savings are going to come from and how we can afford such a bloated civil service.
Okay, so it's time for us to actually then go into the part of the budget that I think everyone was going to be paying attention to, and that's the state-owned enterprises. So let's just listen to this and then we'll come back.
The funding and recovering of struggling state-owned enterprises is anticipated to be this year's big ticket item, particularly after a week-long bout of load shedding, which promptly followed President Ramaphosa's announcement that the state-owned utility Eskom would be restructured.
We've got to address this because Eskom is a risk. We've got all our energy eggs in one basket. It should not be like that. And that is why we are saying we now need to have a new business model for Eskom, where we're able to minimize the risk.
Eskom is anticipated to be separated into 3 different companies, but potential job cuts have made this decision unpopular with unions. and the anticipated cost associated with the restructuring endeavor will likely prove unpopular with taxpayers as well.
So this is going to be the big thing. I think everyone will just be drinking coffee and doing laundry up until Tito Mboweni gets to this part of the of the budget. So what are our thoughts? I think the big one is obviously Eskom, but there's also SAA in the rearview mirror as well. And we also have this thing called the SABC, where they've also announced that they don't want to have job cuts. You know, so where's the money coming from? How is Tito going to allocate this stuff?
That's a big question, isn't it? You know, I mean, while I was away, one of the things I sort of spotted out on Twitter was a picture posted by the Minister of Communications with some team and some documents saying, like, we're working here on, like, I think she called it a bailout for the SABC. And I thought it was so nice. She sounds so proud of herself. Like she's talking about her own money. I can just imagine. But then I'm thinking, okay. So, the way she said it as well, bailout. You know, normally they're trying to use much more, like, I don't know, modest language like restructuring or something like that makes it a bit. But she was like, yeah, like there was a sense that this was a good thing, And obviously the big one, as you mentioned, is Eskom. I mean, Eskom, I don't know how long we're going to make this point. I mean, Eskom is the biggest threat to this country's whole economy, and it's been shown now with this load shedding we've had, and I think I've seen most economists now have downgraded their growth focus, which were always going to be weak, slightly northwards of 1%. Now I think people are looking just under 1%. And I mean, that one, I mean, it's like, first you don't have the electricity, so like it means you that crippled economy, the industry across the economy, probably losing jobs there. And then on the other hand, you also got the whole issue of the finances, where it's like, I mean, they've asked for 100 billion rand from the government, and I almost can guarantee you, like, if they get that 100 billion rand from government in a year or two, they'll be coming back to ask for another 100 billion. Because they're not going to make the hard decisions, right? The restructurings that could lead to strikes and sabotage and all these things. So 100 billion today, another 100 billion next year. I mean, can you really afford it as a country? Probably the answer is no. You know.
And you're right. I think that, you know, Eskom really has South Africa over a barrel, because unlike SABC or SAA, where you could conceivably say, we're not going to give you any more money, you can't do that at Eskom, because then the entire economy comes to a crunching halt.
Yeah. I mean, it's a... But they'll give them 100 billion rand, as I say. They have to. Like, there's no point to it. But the big thing is, go ahead and restructure it. Don't talk about it anymore. Don't put it off. So breaking up into three and...
But Ron, how do you restructure it without cutting jobs?
No, like... cut jobs. Like, I mean, the thing is that job losses are going to be part and parcel of it, and you understand that when you go into this, you're going into a battle with NUMSA. The one thing that this ANC has done and not done well, and I guess the biggest one was actually talking to the unions and letting them in. One of the quotes that caught me last week was Urban Jim saying, we weren't consulted on this thing. Well, maybe when you go make these plans, first run it past Jim and let him have his limb jump up and down, right? But the thing is, we know that Eskom needs to be restructured. That break up into three separate parts is a plan that's been in the works, jeez, on 20 years, I could say.
Yeah.
Just go ahead. And almost... this is the scary thing. Put the unions on the back foot. But if you go ahead and you do the restructuring and you actually seem to be doing it and the unions are fighting and they're threatening and they're sabotaging, I actually think, I don't know, sitting here, the unions are weakening their case in the long term. Yeah, almost like the public falls out with unions, the unions get under pressure. So you've got to take that. But if you don't do it, if you keep on like dilly-dallying on and backtracking, you know, next 10 years after, we'll have Malemba dealing with an Eskom crisis one day as president. Now, do we want him at some point with this big thing to deal that. With when he has nationalization all up in his head? So it just
the biggest irony when you talk about the numbers in terms of jobs. I mean, Eskom's got what 48,000-49,000 people, right? And you got NUMSA and NUMS. Okay, like, you can't touch that. You can't lose any of those jobs. But then the same NUM doesn't seem to be bothered that Eskom tariff increases could actually cost 150,000 miners their jobs.
Yes.
Who you'd assume are also NUM members.
NUM members, right? And NUMSA has the metal workers in the car factories, right?
Yeah.
So those are their people, right? So tariffs go up because Eskom isn't restructuring. They lay off people. So it's like, come, you almost got to...
You have to think in the broader
sense. Yeah, you've got to sit back and say, look, they got loss to lose by not restructuring Eskom.
Yeah.
NUMSA has a loss to lose in any case. Exactly. So you get it clear to the main.
They lose members. I mean, if you got 15,000, say you're going to cut it at Eskom, that can't be touched.
Yes.
But then the consequence of not touching that, you mean you lose 200,000 jobs elsewhere.
In the mining sector.
But that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
I mean, how do you justify that?
See, exact point. And privatization is an ugly thing to hear from NUMSA. But this is
necessary.
2008. You don't have to like fully privatize this thing and give it to private. But also the big thing, we don't want to give Eskom as it is to a private sector, to a private player. As 95% of your energy in the hands of me. And I own this thing. Jesus, how much money I'm going to be printing money, man. I'm making it rain kind of thing.
You're going to do an Enron.
You're doing Enron, right? Yeah. I own this. It's a private sector, so you don't want to do that. We get that, right? But you have to give some level of private sector participation.
I mean,
like even 20%, I don't know, to do something.
While I was away to entertain myself, I read the report from the UK energy regulator. Yeah. I was quite shocked. It was from 2017.
That can't have been that boring a trip, Lee.
It actually was. Do you imagine? There are 50 players there in the energy sector. I mean, they talk about the market they're being concentrated because the top six companies control 80%. Top six.
Top six. 80% of that whole.
Yeah. And then you've got about 49 players overall. Yeah. And here we've got
one.
No, but it also makes sense because in Nigeria, where the national power utility failed, they've also then sold it, I think, to all the states now run their own. And I think Nigeria has over 40, states.
But that only are produces 5,000 megawatts. Right.
Unfortunately.
So, 100 million people. So it hasn't quite played out.
I think, some way to, sort of part on this SOEs and Eskom debate is last year, Cyril Ramaphosa went on a very big investment drive, and he had that stimulus package plan that he had last year. And one of the big things that they said from that particular speech was that they didn't want to borrow any more money externally to fund the stimulus plan because it was going to affect credit ratings and all of that stuff. So, given that with that in mind, where do you likely think Tito is going to get this 100 billion to give to Eskom? Because with the stimulus package, they said they have to move money from non-essential departments. A lot of moving around of money, and that obviously means that in this budget, Tito's going to have to move a lot of money because they don't want to affect that precious credit rating that Moody's is, still nice to us about.
I don't know how they get away with. I mean, they always like to have, they're going to have a stimulus. I always say it's going to be revenue neutral. I mean, they said not revenue neutral.
deficit
neutral. And then you think, in what world can you just find 100 billion like that, just like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see how they get away without borrowing more money. Mm. And we're already expecting our budget deficit to go up to 4%. That's one thing we haven't actually discussed yet, is like the sort of reaction in terms of like market impact, especially in terms of bond markets. I mean, the bond markets, they can look quite boring to like ordinary people, but that determines actually how much money we've got left over to pay for everything else, whether it's schools or education. So if our borrow more, bond yields go up, another percentage point, that's probably another few hundred billion that goes to like bond holders as opposed to like children in school. So these things are not like really academic, even though people like to think. That's why we never hear people talk about like the market reaction and about what the bond market's going to do. I think that would be my big worry, that there's money that we should be spending on all these things is actually going to be going to enriching people who lend to us, mostly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key point, is where are you going to find the money? I mean, and that's the only way to find the money in the spending budget, which is what it is. It's a budget that will focus on what to cut. Will be from the current expenditure on things like NHI, on those kind of things, because there's certain things you can't cut. Tito Mboweni's views on SAA are well known, that we shouldn't keep bailing out that airline. So, yeah. I mean, there are areas where you'll have to be smart, and you have to have smart people around him who can cut the money, because you're not getting more of it from anywhere.
Yep. Cuts or borrowing. So that's going to widen.
But you can't.
The debt to GDP level.
We're 60% nearly?
53%.
I think we're supposed to peak 53. At around 60% in a couple of years. And that's just.
You can't go much higher than that. I mean that's really dangerous territory for the ratings agencies.
Yeah.
That and the deficit.
Yeah. So that's what makes the State of the Nation interesting to me is that, okay, that announcement on the breakup of Eskom, I think, was meant to appease, to an extent, rating agencies and the lenders of Eskom, right? So I think there's no other way to go to raise that fund, I said, going to the market, I think, or reprioritization. You need to make some cuts within the budget you have, and that will be interesting. What who doesn't get that spend? Which department is affected by it? Which is another ball game you're playing to. But anyway, it's a toss up between going out and getting additional borrowing money, and as you say, bond yields going up and so on, within the budget finding 100 billion. I don't know where. I don't know where he's gonna find that, but
that's okay. So we've come to the end of our discussion, but I'm just going to allow, you know, everyone, you know, 30 seconds, parting shots, you know, perhaps. Are there any surprises that we're expecting? Because literally everything was spoken about is what the budget will most likely focus on. Should we be expecting any surprises, or is this just going to be it? Where is the money for SOEs going to come from?
I mean, you can also be optimistic. I think we've made the point. I mean, the only way you include the fiscal situation is to either get the big burst in growth, which you know is going to happen, or we start making some moves in terms of like raising revenue, like either tax increases or probably hopefully not those. I mean, like maybe we can get some big number plus privatizations. I mean, I'm not very optimistic that we'll be getting those.
Yeah.
But it can't just be business as usual. I mean, hopefully there will be coming something, maybe something we haven't thought of.
Cool. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, like Lucanya says, hopefully it's something we haven't thought of. It looks pretty bleak right now. I mean, you know, SARS, people talk about increasing the effectiveness of SARS, and that is part of it. But ultimately, if you're in a weak economy, SARS can only collect so much from people who can't pay anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it has to be spending cuts. And I think now this budget is the time when you have to see some bold steps. People have to make a bold step, because unless you have signaling that you're going to take some brave steps and put the economy on the right track, even if it does anger the unions, then you're not going to get that growth in the longer term.
Cool. Ron?
Yeah. I'm saying, the old news is that we in the economy and the country's in a dire state. So coming there and telling us that in his speech, it would just be like, okay, well, so almost further sink us in depression. So the only good news or news story is that finally are they going to sell an idea that we're on top of it now, we know what to do to rein in rising expenditure, this is the future scenario play for Eskom, this is what we're going to do. So it's just, we almost have to get a lid on stuff and tell us, all of us sitting here, that look, this is where we're going for the next 10 years, right? That's the new story that needs to be sold. All we discussed, we all in a rather down, depressed state when it comes to the state of the country's finances. And that's the new story that somehow Mboweni's got to sell. Maybe he won't be the next finance minister, but that's what he I think we need to sell that. We've been in this thing for the past 5-6 years. I don't know how long it's been.
Yeah, you keep questioning his commitment. I was thinking we didn't even actually discuss that, how much input he actually has in this budget.
Yeah, it's true.
whether he'll actually just be reading it.
Whether it's his budget or he's like, this is what my people said. Yeah. It's another question.
Hopefully that will be something we get to discuss in our post-budget analysis. But otherwise, thank you to everyone for listening to our pre-budget analysis. Thank you to Lucanyo, to Rob, and to Ron for just engaging with this discussion. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza for Multimedia Live. Stay tuned for more as we talk more about the national budget speech. Keep it locked. Thank you.